property REITs, sometimes called equity REITs, where the REIT owns interest in commercial real estate, or as mortgage REITs, where the REIT owns mortgages on commercial real estate projects. Property REITs and mortgage REITs have very different investment characteristics. Property REITs primarily make money by leasing space to commercial tenants and distribute the rent payments they receive as distributions to shareholders. Property REITs generate very predictable income and can make steady dividend payments because their commercial tenants are often locked into multi-year leases with set payment schedules. Mortgage REITs borrow money commercially and lend it out to commercial real estate projects in the form of mortgages. Mortgage REITs make their money on the spread between the interest rate at which they borrow money and the interest rate at which they lend money, which makes them very sensitive to changes in prevailing interest rates. Mortgage REITs tend to do well in declining interest rate environments, where they lock in longer-term mortgages and can borrow money at increasingly affordable rates as prevailing interest rates lower. Conversely, they tend to do poorly when interest rates are rising and the spread between the rates at which they can borrow money and can loan money narrows. Mortgage REITs tend to offer much higher interest rates than property REITs, but their share prices and dividend payments tend to be much more volatile than property REITs. Because of the volatility of mortgage REITs and the unpredictability of future dividend payments, many dividend investors avoid investing in mortgage REITs and focus exclusively on property REITs. Examples of REITs include Public Storage, PSA, Welltower, HCN, Ventas, VTR, Avalon Bay Companies, AVB, and Simon Property Group, SPG. Preferred Stocks. Preferred stock is a special classification of stock ownership that has a higher priority claim on a company's assets, earnings, and dividend payments than common stock does. If a company falls on hard times, its preferred stockholders must be paid their dividends before common stockholders receive any dividend payments. Preferred stockholders generally receive higher dividend yields than common stockholders, but the dividend payments on preferred stock are fixed and will not grow over time. Preferred stocks are said to have features of both stocks and bonds because they offer fixed income payments and also offer some opportunity for capital appreciation. Preferred shares generally do not come with voting rights in the company that issues them. Some preferred shares are callable, meaning that their issuer can buy them back after a set date for a predetermined share price. If interest rates decline, a company may buy back its existing preferred stock and reissue a new series of preferred stock with a lower dividend yield to save money. If interest rates are rising, a company will be less likely to buy back its preferred shares because it is effectively borrowing money at a below-market interest rate. Other preferred shares may be converted to common stock on a set date or by a vote of the company's board, depending on the original term specified for the preferred stock issue. Whether or not a conversion to common stock is profitable for preferred stock investors largely depends on the market price of the company's common stock. Many investors are attracted to preferred stock because of their above-average yields and stable share prices, although it can be a lot of work to research individual preferred stock issuances. In addition to evaluating the company's prospects, investors must also research the characteristics of the individual preferred stock issue they are considering buying. For this reason, many preferred stock investors buy preferred stock mutual funds and ETFs and delegate the work of selecting individual preferred stock issues to professional money managers. Preferred stock mutual funds and ETFs generally pay dividend yields between 5 and 8% in today's market. For example, the iShares U.S. Preferred Stock Fund, PFF, is a popular ETF that primarily invests in preferred stock issuances offered by large financial institutions. It has a dividend yield that hovers between 5 and 6% and currently has a beta of just 0.29, which means its price is only about 30% as volatile as the broader market. It charges an expense ratio of 0.47%, which is in line with the fees charged by other preferred stock ETFs. Business development companies. Business development companies, BDCs, are a special type of corporate entity that was created in the 1980s to encourage the investment of publicly traded funds into private equity investments, BDCs invest growth capital into small and medium-sized businesses in exchange for equity position, much in the way that private equity funds and venture capital, VC funds, do. However, VC funds are typically only accessible to accredited investors who meet very high net worth or income requirements. BDCs are usually publicly traded, which allows anyone to buy shares of them without meeting the accredited investor status requirement. Business development companies have very specific legal requirements under the Investment Company Act that they must follow. According to Wikipedia, the Investment Company Act, A, limits how much debt a BDC may incur, B, prohibits most affiliated transactions, C, requires a code of ethics and a comprehensive compliance program, and D, requires regulation by the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, and subject to regular examination. Like all mutual funds and closed-end funds, BDCs are also required to file quarterly reports, annual reports, and proxy statements with the SEC. Business development companies, just like real estate investment trusts, must distribute 90% of their income to shareholders. But most BDCs distribute as much as 98% of their earnings as distributions so that they can avoid taxation at the corporate level. Because of this profit distribution requirement, BDCs tend to offer extremely high dividend yields that can range between 7 and 20%. Don't be mistaken, though. There is no free lunch here. BDCs are effectively the rocket fuel of the dividend investing world. They can offer dividend yields that you can't find anywhere else, but they are also very volatile, have inconsistent dividend amounts, and can blow up in your face if you're not careful. BDCs invest in privately held microcap companies and can have very wild price swings that make the great dividend payments you receive moot. Many dividend investors, including myself, avoid investing in BDCs altogether because of their wild volatility and inconsistent payout amounts. BDCs can be exciting to watch, but they simply don't fit the mold most income investors are looking for. Established players that have consistent and growing dividend payments over time. Wrap up. Some of the concepts and types of corporate structures in this chapter may be hard to remember at first. Fortunately for you, there's no quiz at the end of this book. Use this chapter as a reference guide to review dividend investing concepts and how different corporate structures work when evaluating individual companies. Always be mindful of the types of corporate structures that companies that you invest in use, because each corporate structure has unique tax rules and investment characteristics. Chapter 3. How to Select Dividend Stocks. As you begin to research dividend-paying stocks, you may be tempted to open your favorite stock screener, sort companies by their dividend, and focus on the companies that pay the highest dividend yields. Unfortunately, there is no such thing as a free lunch in the stock market. If a company is paying a dividend yield that is 4 or 5 times greater than the dividend yield of the S&P 500, there is a pretty strong chance that the dividend isn't going to stick around. Companies that offer dividend yields of 7% or greater may seem alluring, but these high yields are often the result of a significant drop in a company's share price and weak earnings that cannot support the company's dividend over the long term. A while back, a friend of mine invested in the Williams Companies, WMB, when it was trading at around $22. The company's share price had taken a major hit, and it was paying an annual dividend of $2.56, which works out to a yield of about 11.5%. As a novice dividend investor, he purchased the stock purely based on the company's larger-than-average dividend. If he had done a little bit more research, he would have realized that the company only earned 84 cents per share in 2015, and there was no way that they could sustain their dividend. He received exactly 2 quarterly dividend payments at 64 cents each before the company announced it was cutting its annual dividend by 69% in the third quarter of 2016. As an income investor, your goal is to get the best yield available on your money. This can make it very tempting to focus on dividend yield alone. But there are several other criteria that you should use to evaluate divided dividend stocks. You want to make sure that the company will be able to continue to pay out its current dividend by looking at important financial metrics, including a company's dividend payout ratio, debt, net margins, and return on equity. You will also want to determine if your dividend is likely to grow in the future, as evidenced by the company's expected future earnings growth and its history of raising its dividend. You will also want to know whether or not you are paying a fair price for a dividend stock and are getting a historically competitive dividend yield. Use the criteria outlined in this chapter to evaluate each potential dividend stock purchase, and you will have a pretty good idea whether or not the companies you are buying will be able to maintain and grow their dividend over time. Dividend yield. Dividend yield is simply the measure of what percentage of a company's current share price is paid out in dividends each year. Let's imagine that there is a company called Pretend Corp that has a share price of $100, and it pays an annual dividend of $2.50. Pretend Corp's dividend yield is 2.5%. A company's dividend yield will fluctuate throughout the day as the price of the company's stock rises and falls with the market. If a company's stock is doing exceptionally well, its dividend yield will fall as the stock's share price rises. If Pretend Corp's share price were to rise to $150 and its dividend does not change at $2.50 per share, the company's dividend yield would fall to 1.67%. If a company is getting hammered in the market and its price drops, the company's dividend yield will rise. If Pretend Corp were to post dismal earnings and its share price dropped to $50, its dividend yield would rise to 5%. Focus on publicly traded companies that pay a dividend at least 50% higher than that of the S&P 500. As a stock investor who is looking for income, it only makes sense to focus on companies that pay a significantly higher yield than the broad market indexes. As I write this book, the S&P 500 offers a historically low dividend yield of 2.05%. That means the minimum dividend you should be looking for is 3.075% in today's environment. On the other hand, you should treat companies that pay an unusually high dividend yield with a healthy level of skepticism. If a company's dividend yield is more than 3 times greater than the dividend yield of the S&P 500, do extensive research about the company's commitment to its dividend and its ability to maintain its dividend before investing your money. In today's environment, that means you should evaluate a company that pays 6.15% or higher with an extra amount of care and due diligence. Companies that pay extremely high dividend yields often come with outsized investment risks, and their dividend may be at risk of being cut. But that doesn't mean you should avoid dividend stocks with high yields entirely. I personally focus my effort on companies that pay dividend yields between 3.5% and 6.5%. I consider this the Goldilocks zone, or sweet spot, of dividend yields. Companies that pay dividends in this range offer high enough yields to pique our interest as dividend investors, but not so high that the dividend is unlikely to stay around in the future. History of dividend growth. If a company you are evaluating has an attractive dividend yield, the next step is to look at the history of dividend payments. How many years in a row has the company raised its dividend? Has the company ever cut its dividend during a recession? How much does the company raise its dividend every year on average? Ultimately, we are looking for reliable dividend payments that are likely to steadily grow over time, regardless of current market conditions. If a company has a track record of raising its dividend every year over the course of a couple of decades, there is a strong likelihood that it will continue along the same path of steadily raising its dividend if it is financially able to do so. When I research a dividend stock, I pay special attention to what happened with the company's dividend in 2008 and 2009 during the Great Recession. During the 6-month period between September 2008 and October 2009, 46 companies on the S&P 500 reduced or eliminated their quarterly dividend payments. During the same period, 82 S&P 500 companies were able to raise their dividend through the depths of the Great Recession. Granted, some of those increases were token bumps so that companies could boast about their track record of raising their dividends every year. If a company was able to maintain and grow its dividend throughout 2008 and 2009 while the global economy was in bad shape, that's a pretty good sign that the company is committed to its dividend and will be able to continue making dividend payments during challenging economic times. I personally focus on companies that have raised their dividend every year for at least the last 10 years. If a company has raised its dividend 10 years in a row, that is a pretty good indication that the company's management is committed to growing its annual dividend. You should also read what the company's management has to say about its dividend in its quarterly earnings reports and other public commentary to make sure that the company will continue to be committed to its dividend in the future. I also focus on companies that have grown their dividend by an average of 5 to 10% over the last 3 years. I am willing to accept lower dividend growth rates on companies that have dividend yields on the higher end of the 3.5 to 6.5% spectrum I target. For companies that have a dividend yield of less than 4%, I will want to see an annual dividend growth rate very close to 10%. How fast your portfolio companies raise their income will have a huge impact on the dividend income created by your portfolio over time. Let's imagine that you owned a portfolio of dividend stocks that raised their dividend by an average of 7% each year. If you had a dividend portfolio that started out with a yield of 4.5%, you would be receiving dividend payments equal to 10.1% of your original investment after holding them for 12 years. After holding your investments for 25 years, you would be receiving dividend payments equal to 24.4% of your original investment each year. Tip: you can use MarketBeat.com to look up a company's annual dividend, its dividend yield, its dividend payout ratio, its forward-looking dividend payout ratio, its track record of consecutive years of dividend growth, its 3-year average of annual dividend growth, and other important financial metrics. Simply head on over to MarketBeat.com in your favorite web browser and enter the ticker symbol of the stock you are researching in the search box. When that stock's company profile page loads, click the Dividends tab to access these metrics. Earnings growth and dividend payout ratio. A company's track record of steadily raising their dividend and its management's commitment to its dividend are always a good sign. But a company may be forced to reduce or eliminate its dividend if the company's earning can no longer support its dividend. Dividends are paid to shareholders out of earnings. If a company's earnings are stagnant on a year-over-year basis, the company may not raise its dividend at all, or it may merely issue a token dividend increase to maintain its track record of consecutively raising dividends every year. If a company's earnings decline for several quarters in a row and it must pay out an unsustainably high percentage of its earnings as dividends, its board of directors may be forced to reduce or eliminate its dividend. The measure which shows what percentage of a company's earnings is being paid out as a dividend is known as the dividend payout ratio. Dividend payout ratio is calculated by taking the company's annual dividend and dividing it by its earnings per share. For example, Wells Fargo currently pays out an annual dividend of $1.52 per share. The company has posted earnings per share of $4.08 per share over the last 4 quarters. This would put Wells Fargo's current dividend payout ratio at a healthy 37.2%. You should also calculate a company's forward-looking dividend payout ratio by dividing an average of analysts' EPS estimates for the next fiscal year by its dividend. While a company may have a healthy dividend payout ratio now, you may be able to spot clouds on the horizon ahead if multiple analysts are forecasting a significant earnings decline in the coming quarters. If analysts were predicting that Wells Fargo's earnings were going to drop by 50% over the next year to $2.04 per share, they're not, its dividend payout ratio would rise to a much less healthy 74.5%, and the continuation of its current dividend would be less of a sure thing. The companies that you invest in as a dividend investor will generally have a relatively high dividend payout ratio. It only makes sense that companies that pay out strong dividends will pay out a significant portion of their earnings as dividends. Most of the companies that I personally invest in have dividend payout ratios between 40 and 70%. You should generally avoid companies that have a payout ratio higher than 75%, Because there isn't a lot of money left over to reinvest in the growth of the business, and a short-term earnings hiccup could force the company to cut its dividend. However, a very high payout ratio does not mean a company will automatically cut its dividend. Companies tend to be reluctant to cut their dividends and will sometimes borrow money or use retained earnings to pay their annual dividend during periods of weak earnings. Real estate investment trusts, REITs, business development companies, BDCs, and master limited partnerships, MLPs, are the two exceptions to the suggested 75% dividend payout ratio limit. REITs and BDCs are required by law to pay out 90% of their income to shareholders in the form of dividend. Logically, REITs and BDCs will generally have dividend payout ratios that exceed 90% because of this rule. While MLPs do not have the same requirement to pay out 90% of their income as distributions, they tend to have strong cash flow but weak reported earnings due to the capital-intensive nature of their businesses. Consequently, MLPs generally have very high reported dividend payout ratios. When evaluating the sustainability of dividend payments for REITs and MLPs, calculate a company's payout ratio based on its distributable cash flow rather than its reported earnings. Distributable cash flow is a measure of profitability that identifies how much money the company actually has to use for paying out dividends, reducing debt, investing in growth, or buying back its own shares. Distributable cash flow can be calculated by taking cash flow from operations minus capital expenditures, preferred dividends, debt service, and other one-time items. By dividing a REIT or MLP's dividend per share into its distributed cash flow per share, you can calculate a ratio that will provide a better idea of the sustainability of the company's dividend. Debt. Banks will rarely lend more money to people that are already deeply in debt, because they know that consumers that have a heavy debt burden are already paying out a large percentage of their income in debt payments and simply don't have the cash flow to make payments on new debt. Likewise, publicly traded companies that have a large amount of debt are often limited in their ability to return capital to shareholders in the form of dividends, because much of their cash flow goes toward making debt payments. You can determine a publicly traded company's debt burden by looking at its debt-to-equity ratio, which is simply the amount of debt the company has divided by the amount of shareholder equity. A debt-to-equity ratio of 1-to-1 is generally acceptable, and any ratio lower than that is even better. Debt-to-equity ratios will vary from industry to industry. In industries like telecommunications, manufacturing, and utilities, debt-to-equity ratios will be higher, because companies in these industries use debt to finance long-term, large-scale projects. Companies in industries that have lower infrastructure requirements, such as consumer discretionary and consumer staples companies, will generally have lower debt-to-equity ratios. When evaluating a company's debt-to-equity ratio, make sure to compare it to the debt-to-equity ratios of other companies in the same industry, so that you are making a true apples-to-apples comparison of how much debt a company has compared to its competitors. Profitability. A good way to determine whether or not a company will continue to have free cash flow to pay its dividend is by looking at the company's net profit margins, which often get shortened to net margins. Net margin is a metric that calculates the percentage of a company's net revenue that is kept as profit. If a company has gross revenue of $1 billion, and keeps $200 million as profit at the end of the year, it has a 20% net margin. Companies that have higher net margins are able to weather economic turmoil easier than companies with lower net margins are able to, because they can better temporarily weather periods of lower sales or higher expenses. For example, Buffalo Wild Wings, BWLD, has a net margin that hovers between 5 and 6%. If there was a major recession and the company had to lower the price of its menu items by 10% to attract new customers, the company would be losing money each quarter. BWLD competitor Dave & Buster's, Play, currently has a net margin of about 12%. If it had to similarly discount its menu items by 10% for a period of time, it could still maintain its profitability. While neither BWLD nor Play currently pays a dividend, Play would be much better able to continue to pay a dividend during challenging economic times because it has higher profit margins than its competitor, BWLD. Profit margins will vary significantly from industry to industry, so there's no hard and fast rule indicating what would be considered a healthy net margin for any given dividend stock. However, you should demand minimum net margins of at least 5% in the companies that you invest in, because net margins can vary depending on current economic conditions. By requiring a minimum level of profitability, you can avoid relying on getting dividend payments from companies whose ability to generate profit during challenging economic conditions is in question. Another way to measure a company's profitability is return on equity, ROE, which can be calculated by dividing a company's net income by the company's shareholder equity. ROE shows the percentage of net income that a company is generating relative to the amount of money that shareholders have invested in the company. Companies that have a higher ROE percentage are more efficient in utilizing their shareholder equity to generate returns for their shareholders. Generally speaking, analysts consider a 15 to 20% ROE percentage as good. ROE is particularly useful for comparing the profitability of multiple companies in the same industry. If you are considering investing in either Coke or Pepsi, you might compare their ROE percentages as a means of seeing which company is more profitable. ROE is a metric that can fluctuate significantly from quarter to quarter, so a multi-year average ROE might be a better tool for comparison than simply looking at the data from the most recent quarter. Tip: you can easily look up a company's historical debt-to-equity ratios, net margins, and return on equity numbers using ycharts.com. The easiest way to find the specific metric you are looking for is to do a Google search of the ycharts.com website. For example, if you wanted to find Apple's net margins, you would do a Google search for site:ycharts.com/Apple net margins. Fair value estimate. There is an inverse correlation between a company's share price and its dividend yield, which makes it especially important to pay attention to the ups and downs of the market and buy companies when they have been beat up a little bit, their share price is down, and their dividend yield is higher than usual. Some of the best buys that you will make as a dividend investor will occur when an otherwise good company's share price is getting hammered over short-term bad news, such as weak earnings or a major lawsuit. Cummins, CMI, a major diesel engine manufacturer, saw its share price drop from $120 in September 2015 to a low of around $83.50 in January 2016, after seeing a year-over-year decline in revenue. I thought Cummins was fundamentally a good company, given that it makes a sizable portion of the world's diesel engines, and that the stock was oversold. I bought shares of the company at $86.37 and was able to lock in a yield of 4.75%. In the 7 months that followed my purchase, the company's share price rose back up to around $125, and its dividend yield dropped to 3.25%. Because I was fortunate enough to purchase the stock when its share price was depressed, I was able to lock in a yield much higher than Cummins investors are able to get today, and had the added benefit of price appreciation in the shares I bought. My favorite tool to determine where a company is trading relative to its intrinsic value is Morningstar at Morningstar.com's proprietary fair value estimates. Morningstar's analysts issue estimates of what they think any given stock should currently be priced at given the company's financials, long-term prospects, economic moat, and other factors. Fair value estimates attempt to strip away the irrationality of the market and provide a general idea of what a stock should be priced at so that you know whether or not you are overpaying for a stock. Morningstar's fair value estimates are far from a perfect metric, because all equities research analysts are fallible, but they can provide a helpful idea whether or not a stock has been overbought or oversold. You do need a Morningstar premium account for a subscription to Morningstar Dividend Investor to look up fair value estimates. Morningstar premium subscriptions are currently sold for $23.95 per month, or $199 per year. More information about Morningstar's premium subscription offerings can be found at members.morningstar.com. Another way that you can determine whether or not a dividend stock is currently a good buy is by looking at a chart of the company's dividend yield over time. By looking at a graphic representation of the company's annual dividend relative to its